Welcome to Island Watch, the podcast where we watch movies and TV shows set on islands. Hi, I'm Dave Zark.
And I'm Gemma Voss. This week on Island Watch, we're doing things a little bit differently. We're sailing through the archipelago and into harbor with a plan to stay ashore for a few months. Before we go, though, it's our season-ending wrap party.
All aboard, and let's get this party started.
It's hard to believe that it's already time for our season finale.
Before you know it, we'll be back with more great episodes in fall 2021.
And the Good Ship Island Watch may pop out for a little day trip here and there in the between time, so make sure you subscribe, and bonus episodes will go straight to you without delay.
That's right. Subscribe, and you won't ever miss any of our shows.
For today's archipelago special, we have lists, we have food, we have news, we have messages from multiple bottles.
And by the way, if this is your first Island Watch episode ever, we'd love to have you listen to some regular episodes to get a taste of what we usually do here, because this special archipelago episode is a whole different thing.
First up today is our segment, Beached, Episodes That Couldn't Set Sail.
These are mini-reviews of shows that, for one reason or another, just didn't fit into this season of Island Watch.
That's Meryl Streep in Mamma Mia, of course, the first film that we let slip through our fingers. Not because we didn't like it, but because we wound up with two other wedding movies, Bazo Dee and Top End Wedding. And those real islands were places we just wanted to visit more.
If you'd like us to feature one or all of the Mamma Mia movies, write us and let us know. One of the things we'll be doing this summer is plotting our itinerary for next season.
So another Hollywood film that we considered for this past season was Couples Retreat. It's a 2009 rom-com about four couples in various stages of marriage. It was filmed on Bora Bora and stars Kristen Bell, love her.
Oh yeah.
Jason Bateman.
He's great.
Love him. And some other big names like Vince Vaughn and Jon Favreau. And Jon Favreau also co-wrote this. So sounds like everything should be good. The plot is simple and predictable, and honestly, that's okay. Give me some gorgeous ocean views and some laughs and some romance. You know, it's a rom-com in French Polynesia. But unfortunately, the beautiful ocean views are really the only thing that the movie delivers on. There's no rom, there's no calm, and in the end, you don't care whether the four couples stay together or not. And the only tension holding it together is wondering why most of the cast signed up for this messy ride. My island rating is lower than you might think. I'm giving it a 2. Just because visually, honestly, you'll get as much out of watching any Bora Bora tourism video on YouTube. My star rating is 0.5. Beach this smarm fest.
Let's get out of these waters and head up to the English Channel, to the Channel Islands, for The Others. The Others is a 2001 suspense film starring Nicole Kidman. It's directed by Spanish filmmaker Alejandro Amenábar. It's 1945 on Jersey, soon after liberation from Nazi occupation and the end of the war. Kidman's character, Grace Stewart, lives in a house with her two children, who are sensitive to daylight and must stay inside. Strange things go bump in the night, and Grace fears that there's a mysterious group of malevolent others who are out to get them.
Sometimes the world of the dead gets mixed up with the world of the living.
As you can see, the housework has been rather neglected since the servants disappeared almost a week ago.
Do you mean they just vanished?
Into thin air.
How do you do, children? I'm your new nanny.
Are you going to leave us too?
Why should I leave you?
The others said they wouldn't, but they did, and then it happened.
It's a kind of tight, almost claustrophobic kind of film. Not a bad movie, but we didn't think that we would get much of an island feel for Jersey. So we decided to explore the neighboring island of Guernsey and its potato peel pie instead. Now The Others, I would give it 3 out of 5 for suspense, but as for island rating, I would barely give The Others a 1, just peeking out a hotel window.
Yeah, we are looking for island shows that give you a as close to real as possible sense of the place, even if the island is fictional.
Well, one island that is real is Tuan, an uninhabited small island in the Torres Straits off the coast of Australia. And the next movie we considered is based on the real-life adventure of two British authors.
Gerald Kingsland and Lucy Irvine, total strangers until she answered his ad.
Mr. Kingsland?
And made an extraordinary commitment.
Now make sure that we don't starve, Lucy.
To spend a year together, alone, in an island paradise.
If this sounds familiar, it's because we talked about the true life story it's based on back in episode 9, The Wilds. Lucy Irvine published a book about her experience in 1983, and this 1986 movie, called Castaway, is an adaptation of that. It stars Amanda Donahoe, before she had greater fame in the TV show L.A. Law, and Oliver Reed. I didn't mind the film. I would give it 3.5 out of 5 for watchability, and as for the island feel, it was pretty thorough. 4 out of 5, toes in the sand.
Well, I'm going to disagree with you on this one, Dave, because I did not like this film at all, and I am very happy to have left it beached.
Okay. Well, did we leave behind any films that you liked, Gemma?
Yes, and I was sad to do it, but we thought it would be too difficult for most viewers to get hold of this movie. Last I checked, it's not available to stream, and on Amazon the DVD was available, but will set you back over $550 Canadian.
We're talking about Cold Fever, directed by Fredrik Thor Fredriksson.
That's right. When it was released, one reviewer called it the best Icelandic-Japanese road movie of 1995.
That's such a great tagline.
But it's actually true. It's one of the best road movies ever, in my opinion. Masatoshi Nagase stars as Hirata, a young Japanese businessman who's obliged to travel to Iceland. He's on the Icelandic road and searching out the remote mountain river where his parents died a few years earlier. All this so he can perform a ritual for them. He had actually planned to spend his vacation time in Hawaii playing golf, so a winter Icelandic adventure wasn't in the cards. But it works magic on him and on the viewer. This movie is kind of like a fever dream with all sorts of odd bits popping out of nowhere. There's goat heads and country and western bars and American tourists who are played by 90s indie film darlings Lily Taylor and Fisher Stevens. It's mystery, it's menace, it's wonder, all together in a snowy, icy winterscape, but the film is very warm at heart. So I'd say if you can come across this film, nab it. I give it an island rating of 4 out of 5 for its winter island vibes and 4.5 stars out of 5 for a fantastical story fantastically told. And now, time for Message in a Bottle.
In a time when it seems everything is virtual, we have real messages from listeners. Did they arrive in bottles? Not exactly. But we don't love mail any less if it comes through standard channels. You can always write to us at islandwatchpodcast@gmail.com.
Okay, we'll start with a letter from Patricia. She says, Dear Dave and Gemma, thanks for all the work you do putting together the Island Watch podcast. I've been enjoying listening to the episodes and especially like being introduced to movies, documentaries, and shows on or about islands, of course, that I did not know about before. Your conversations are fun, the food suggestions are a cool addition, and the background info on the website is always interesting. Keep up the good work.
Thanks, Patricia. We got a review from Pam, who writes, The Island Watch podcast is a very clever exercise in connecting film to the geography and science of islands around the world, as well as highlighting urgent environmental challenges. It is interesting, educational, and very entertaining. Dave and Gemma engage in humorous and intelligent conversations full of puns and fun facts. The amount of research they have done is impressive. The podcast provides trailers of old movies and documentaries, along with Dave and Gemma's recommendations and criticisms that have encouraged me to search out and watch them. Hopefully there will be a season 3.
Thanks a lot, Pam. And here's a letter from JWS, who writes, Greetings, Island Watchers. Love the show. Especially enjoyed the South Pacific episode with such cool things like floating coconuts and diverse animal life in the vast ocean. Keep up the good work, and I don't mind the elephant seals in the room.
Thanks, JWS. I mean, I appreciate a listener who appreciates a good pun.
Okay. They're talking about the South Pacific episode where we talked about the elephant in the room.
The elephant seal in the room.
Anyway, thanks to everyone for your letters, your reviews, your notes. We do the show for you, so it's great to hear that you're enjoying it.
Island Watch looks at the world in a unique way. That is, islands first. So when we thought about you, our listeners, sitting down to watch the shows that you heard us review, we wanted to bring something more to the table. And for our archipelago episode, we like to set up a seasonal smorgasbord segment that we call Island Chef.
Like I always say, there's nothing wrong with popcorn, but when it comes to Island Watch viewing, I want to up my game and have some snacks that will help me make the viewing experience a real occasion, like a real getaway.
When one day feels the same as the next, you need to break it up with something that stands out. I mean, Gemma, you must have been challenged by our first episode this season. We visited a deserted island with some freshly marooned plane crash survivors via the highly bingeable series, The Wilds.
Yeah, we didn't want to just leave you on the beach eating whatever you could find in the bottom of your purse. So we piggybacked onto the first episode's flashback and found one of the survivors sharing a memorable taco and pop meal in the past. And so I made a taco bar for nibbling as you watch the show.
Well, that does make for pretty good movie food.
It does, and we even included a keto version. They're both great.
Next, we went to Tobago for one of the two weddings we had this season.
Bazo D, that crazy, in-love, feel-good movie set during Carnival season, packed with soca music and island times.
If I could be there, coconuts would be the first thing I would have. But if I recall, your menu wasn't that simple.
Well, no, not simple. I mean, this movie's characters are out and about during Carnival, and they're spending a lot of time mixing and mingling, so I just thought street food is the best here. I mean, it's eats that you would grab on the way home after you danced all night.
And of course, you're featuring recipes that are genuine Trinidad and Tobago dishes.
I got acquainted with some excellent food channels from Trinidad and Tobago to do just that. I really love a channel called Foodie Nation. It's a chef and a friend who they're either cooking at home or they go out to the market, show you around the market, or they go to restaurants. They even visit home chefs around the island, and they're really well produced. You get to see a lot of the island. They're beautiful.
And isn't that the channel where you learned the word Trinbagonian from?
It is. I always wondered, how did people get around the mouthful of saying, I'm from Trinidad and Tobago? So Trini, or Trinbagonian, is the solution. Another new word that I learned is culantro.
And that's different from cilantro, right?
It's definitely different. They're both herbs, but culantro has a long, slender leaf. It's actually known as Shadow Benny there, and they make a fantastic sauce from it. So we can listen in here on the Foodie Nation folks as they discuss how to make and use a Shadow Benny sauce.
This is what we're looking at here, guys. This beautiful, rich, vibrant Shadow Benny sauce that goes well. You could use this in your doubles, put a little bit of this in your chow. Your frying fish at home works well. Fried shark, by all means.
Fish.
I mean, it's the world of wonders works with this. And this is one of those great herbs and the great sauces that scream Trinidad and Tobago cuisine.
Something we love.
All this savory stuff. Did you feature any sweets in any of the menus?
Of course. Actually, our next episode was sort of a dessert special. We visited Cape Breton, part of the Eastern Maritime Province of Nova Scotia in Canada, and cooked up some classics like date squares and, you know, just a basic chocolate cake, the kind of family sits around the kitchen table and eats with glasses of milk.
Be it ever so humble, there's no place like the kitchen table to really lay into some good cake.
You get it. The scene in New Waterford Girl, where they're sharing the cake, it's so sweet. It's one of those moments you see in the chaos of family life, everyone's just joining together and sharing a breather for a few precious moments.
I think they nearly made it through that scene without snarking at each other.
Oh, it was sweet snark. And speaking of families, we met another family in our next episode, a family in the throes of wedding planning.
We visited the Tiwi Islands at the very northern tip of Australia, which is where the movie found its name, Top End Wedding.
The fiancés are so busy, they don't seem to have time to eat, although he does make a stunning Eggs Benedict on a picnic for her. Listen, there's going to be a wedding party, so, you know, just keep it simple and pop some bubbly.
Well, there's a lot of champagne corks popping in our next film, too. The Guernsey Literary and Potato Peel Pie Society.
The end of the war was good reason to celebrate. During the war, the Channel Islanders survived on ever-decreasing amounts of food. In real life, thousands more would have died if not for the Red Cross shipping in food for both the residents and the German occupiers in the last months of the war.
So our picnic for this episode was modest, and we still don't recommend the potato peel pie.
I wanted to balance the wartime scarcity with some down-to-earth, stick-to-your-ribs, traditional Guernsey dishes. So you can head to the website to find recipes for traditional Guernsey bean jar. It's essentially baked beans, and a nice piece of Guernsey gosh, which is a yeasted fruit loaf, and it's just begging for a good slathering of Guernsey butter.
And a nice cup of tea as well.
Oh yeah, don't forget the cuppa.
Probably the biggest feast of the season was our next episode, because Chef Ainsley Harriott took us on a tour with his show, Ainsley's Caribbean Kitchen.
There are just too many dishes to mention by name. But I didn't limit the picnic to just Ainsley's recipes. Our picnic picks include recipes from good home cooks from Antigua, Dominica, Grenada, and St. Lucia.
And finally, we ended the viewing portion of our season with the documentary South Pacific.
This was a nature documentary, so there are no dishes to work from. So I took a different tack and wrote about how to find sustainable fish. It's a habit I need to grow. Islands and oceans mean so much more to me than they ever did before doing the podcast. And if I'm serious about loving these places, I need to do my part to protect them.
Visit islandwatchpodcast.com to see Gemma's picnic picks and recipes. Be your own island chef.
Now it's time for one of our most popular archipelago segments, News of the Weird, Beachcomber Edition.
Before we get started, when you hear the words news and island these days, it's likely that St. Vincent and the recent eruption of its volcano Soufriere come to mind. It's a continuing situation where people are dealing with after effects like ash, which is making life very challenging.
We send our thoughts to the people of St. Vincent and other affected islands as they work through this. For each destination we visit, whether it's a movie or a TV show or a find the island location, we spend a good deal of time searching and reading, looking for the goods, the information that we want to share with you.
And with each destination, we inevitably come across so many more interesting stories than there's ever room to share on the show and on our website.
It's kind of like we're strolling along a place called Research Beach. We've got our eyes peeled for flotsam, jetsam, and other relics. And we find so many treasures that we created this special archipelago segment called News of the Weird, Beachcomber Edition. So, let's dive in.
As an Island Watch listener, we know that you love islands, and we know you love movies, so this story is meant for you. There's a lonely island just off the west coast of Sweden called Hamnaskar. It lies about 30 kilometers northwest of the city of Gothenburg. And on Hamnaskar Island is a lighthouse known as Paternoster, and that lighthouse has been converted into a small boutique hotel. The city of Gothenburg holds an annual film festival, which of course had to be presented in a much different way for its 2021 edition, and that was held back in January 29th to February 8th. The organizers came up with a novel idea. They held a contest to send the winner to stay in Paternoster for a week to watch all of the festival's films, alone, all alone. No one else there. No phone, no email or social media. Just lots of movies to watch over the course of a week. So who would be interested in that? Well, more than 12,000 people from 45 countries entered the contest. The winner was Lisa Enroot, a Swedish ER nurse who works on the front line of the COVID pandemic. This was an opportunity for her to get away. She watched more than 30 films. She recorded daily video diaries, explored the island, and had a lot of time for introspection. She spoke with As It Happens on CBC Radio about the experience.
What do you tell people when they ask you, like, what was that like?
Oh, well, what did I learn about myself? I learned that I feel better when I put my phone away. And especially if I'm to watch movies now, I'm not going to have my phone nearby because that is such a distraction. What did I learn about myself? Maybe that I am able to do this. I am able to isolate myself and be comfortable with myself and no one around. I can do that.
At a time when so many people are tired of having to be alone, here was someone who sought out and relished the opportunity to be alone on an island.
It's such a creative idea, and what a break for that nurse. There's actually another movie-related update to this story. So at the Academy Awards every year, the nominees get a, you know, high-end gift bag. There's things like wellness products and jewelry and exclusive memberships and hotel stays. So this year, a trip to stay at Paternoster is one of the items. I guess you could take your Oscar along for company.
Well, we'll have to check back and see if any of the winners do spend time there.
Have you heard of the Pokemon Go Grandpa?
No, I have not.
Okay, he's real. His name is Chen Sanyuan. He's a 73-year-old Taiwanese man who I guess has really kind of gone overboard on a hobby introduced to him by his grandson. In 2016, Chen started playing Pokemon Go, which is, you know, the augmented reality game that requires players to go to real locations to capture animated characters. Chen got into it so much that by 2018, he was playing the game with 15 phones at one time. And he said the multiple phones meant he was able to get to higher levels of the game faster and he could capture rarer creatures. Well, he himself has become the rarest of creatures because he has now fashioned himself, it looks like a peacock fan, kind of. It's a display of 64 phones mounted on the front of his bicycle so he can just kind of peer through between the phones to see where he's going. According to Taiwan News, his hobby costs him about $714 US monthly in phone fees alone. He got a bit of a shakeup in February because there was a malfunction in Taiwan's earthquake warning system. It happened at 1:36 a.m., and it meant that every resident on their phone received over a dozen emergency text messages per phone. He was out on his bike playing Pokemon Go at the time. It took him about 25 minutes to turn off all of the phone alerts, and when he was done, he felt the situation wasn't that serious, so he just got back to the game.
How often have you been flying over the ocean, looking down at the waves, scanning for signs of life? Well, if you were eagle-eyed enough, you might spot a rowboat. For example, the boat Rudderly Mad. In it, Jasmine Harrison, a 21-year-old swimming teacher from North Yorkshire in England. She became the youngest woman to row solo across the Atlantic. The Guardian reports that Harrison left La Gomera in the Canary Islands in December and arrived in Antigua 70 days, 3 hours, and 40 minutes later. Along the way, she ate a lot of peanut butter, battled 20-foot waves, was circled by sharks, nearly collided with a tanker, and capsized twice. And she says,
I loved it. There's nothing like actually getting away from everything, from social media, from bad news, from literally everything. So I ring my friends up and they just say, oh, you're in another lockdown from like 3 weeks ago. I'm like, oh, I don't know. I don't care.
On the same Canary Island to Antigua route, but in a boat nicknamed Never Too Old, Frank Rothwell from Oldham, England, became the oldest person to row the Atlantic, raising more than 648,000 pounds for Alzheimer's Research UK.
Moving from the Atlantic down to the Southwest Pacific and the Tasman Sea, we're checking in on the Tasmanian Devil. No, not the Looney Tunes character. It's the actual marsupial creatures from the island state off the south coast of Australia. For decades, their population has been devastated by a deadly disease called Devil Facial Tumor Disease, or DFTD. It's a facial cancer that is spread animal to animal through bites. It's estimated that it has killed about 80% of the animals. But a new paper in the journal Science indicates that the curve has been flattened and that the surviving population have likely developed a genetic ability to tolerate and resist the cancer. The researchers said there was increasing evidence that some devils could recover from DFTD, which was not the case when the disease initially started to spread. There are believed to be about 10,000 devils left in the wild.
And they're surprisingly cute. They tugged at my heartstrings when I saw the picture of them. Back in the days when you could be more footloose and fancy-free, a 19-year-old set out from Wales, in the UK, to work in Australia for 2 years on contract for Victorian Railways. But soon after he arrived, he knew the work wasn't for him, and he was really desperate to return home. Problem was, he was earning £40 a month, but breaking the contract and paying for a ticket home would cost £700. I told you, this is back in time, right? Like, not now. So, Brian Robson and two Irish work buddies, they came up with a, let's say, a genius scheme. According to CBC News, they fitted out a crate just big enough for him to sit with his knees pulled up to his chest. And in went an empty bottle, for obvious purposes, a flashlight, a bottle of water, a small suitcase, a pillow, and a hammer to bust out. Despite numerous labels with fragile and handle with care, and the all-important this side up, things didn't go well. The flight his friends shipped him on was supposed to be direct from Melbourne to London and take 36 hours. But instead, Robson wound up stuck in the crate for 5 days, 24 hours of which was upside down on a tarmac as the crate went on a milk run of seemingly every runway between Australia and the UK. Finally, Robson figured he was in London, and he was able to get his muscles moving enough to turn on the flashlight, but he promptly dropped it, and he couldn't retrieve it. And the shining light attracted attention of some airline employees.
There was a notch hole type thing in the side of the crate, and he looked through, and he looked straight into my eye. Well, if there was an Olympic Games going on at the time, he'd have won for a backflip. I've never seen anybody backflip so far. And then they started shouting and screaming that there was a dead body in the crate. And within a very short time, there were maybe 20 or 40 people around, including FBI, CIA, everybody.
It turns out he was in the States, not the UK. This all happened in 1965, so why is it news now? Brian Robson has written a book about his experience called, wait for it, The Crate Escape.
Love it.
And he's looking for the two young Irish friends who nailed him into the crate and sent him on his way.
Well, humans aren't the only ones trying to make getaways. Kenyan conservationists and American nonprofit Save Giraffes Now were on the job on an island called Lonicharo in Lake Baringo, Kenya. The water on the island has been rising, and the herd of Rothschild's giraffes, they are an endangered species, was struggling to survive because their food supply was at risk. It took them from last December, but on April 12th they were able to get the last two giraffes relocated. And Garakoni and her baby Noel are now safe in Ruko Community Conservancy with the seven other members of their herd. The giraffes had to be floated away from the island on a raft. Apparently, they got the giraffes used to the raft by leaving food on it and letting the animals get comfy with it over time. And yes, the raft was called Giraffed. It was custom built with tall sides, as you can imagine. Time to play Find the Island. With so many islands in the world, it's challenging to figure out which to visit. That's why we created this Find the Island segment, to learn more about or even discover islands that are new to us. For this special, we're going to explore two islands, one at a time. Here's how to play. One of us gives a series of clues about an island, and the other tries to work out what place it is. Best of all, you can play along at home. Gemma, I'm ready if you've got the clues.
All right, here we go. Lots of things grow very well on this island. Some of the more famous products are lavender, potatoes, butter, beef, and scallops. The scallops have the wonderful Latin name Patinopectin yesoensis.
Okay, sounds like a lot of interesting products, but I'm sorry, I don't know what the island is.
No problem. Most people love sandy island beaches, but this island offers different kinds of attractions. So, for example, every second week in February for the past 70-odd years, this island has hosted a snow festival.
Okay, sounds interesting. Sorry, no idea.
No idea, okay, no worries. One of the island's coal mining towns that hit hard times and was trying to revitalize its economy hit on the idea to bring in tourists. In a pretty unusual way, they made an exact, like down to the wallpaper, replication of the Anne of Green Gables house and surroundings, and then hired two girls to play the parts of Anne and her friend Diana.
Okay. Well, I know that Anne of Green Gables is really popular in Japan, so I wonder if this is a Japanese island.
It is. We're just going to narrow it down because there's quite a few islands to choose from.
Yeah. There's several islands, yeah.
Well, the capital of the island is home to the country's oldest brewery, which was established in 1876.
Well, I'm not much of a drinker, so that doesn't help me much. Any more clues?
Well, I know you know a lot about cultures and people, so this one might do it. The indigenous people of this island call it Ainu Moser, which means land of the Ainu.
Ainu, yes. I think it's Hokkaido, correct?
Yes, it's Hokkaido. Hokkaido is part of Japan, as you know, and it accounts for a fifth of the landmass of the country. Hokkaido is really well known across Japan and Asia for its agricultural products, like the scallops that I mentioned. Those Hokkaido scallops are often how they appear on menus. And probably known worldwide for its Sapporo beer brand. Sapporo is Hokkaido's capital city, and it hosts the Sapporo Yuki Matsuri, also known as Sapporo Snow Festival, over 7 days every February, except when there's a worldwide pandemic. I want to go there, and when I do, I just recently read about Kenkun. Not Cancun, Kenkun. So it's a dog named Ken. He's a Shiba Inu dog, which is a Japanese breed, who is the proud proprietor of his own roasted sweet potato stand.
What? A dog is the proprietor of a food stand?
Okay, he doesn't make change because he doesn't have thumbs. But anyway, you have to see him in action, and you can by following the link on our website.
Okay, gonna check that out.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, and what about this Anne of Green Gables house? That sounds kind of interesting.
It is. The Anne of Green Gables house was built as part of a theme park called Canadian World.
Ooh.
That opened in the early 90s in a town called Ashibetsu, which is over 1,000 kilometers from Tokyo and a 2-hour train ride from Sapporo. It still was generally a less expensive option for Japanese tourists who are really... There's a lot of people who are really crazy about Anne of Green Gables. It was less expensive for them to go to Hokkaido than to visit Prince Edward Island in Canada. So Anne's house and surroundings, like I mentioned, were lovingly created right down to the wallpaper. The park hired girls from Canada to play the parts of Anne and her friend Diana, and You can read a first-person account on our website. Sadly, the park's fortunes went into decline with the Asian financial crisis of 1997, and in 2014, it closed for good. It still opens sort of as a park that you can walk through for free, but everything is just sort of falling apart because there's no money behind it anymore. So in a move that Anne would have approved of, Ashibetsu and Charlottetown, PEI, became sister cities in 1993, and every second year, junior high school students from Ashibetsu visit PEI on a cultural exchange.
And what about the Ainu indigenous people?
Ainu are, like we mentioned, indigenous to northern Japan, not just Hokkaido. They are a completely different culture from the Japanese. So right now we're looking for a movie or documentary that we may be able to share some of that Ainu culture with you. For now, it's Dave's turn to feature an island.
This island is a member of an archipelago. The group consists of 8 major islands, plus more than 100 smaller islands, reefs, etc., and that's spread out over more than 16,000 square kilometers. And the Mystery Island is number 6 in size of the 8 major ones, and it's the smallest inhabited one.
Okay, I have some ideas. I feel like we're in the Pacific.
Actually, yes, we are. The population of this island is about 3,000 people, but 98% of the land is owned by one rich guy. 98%.
Okay, I don't know yet.
This island was long known for one type of produce, and the first one was planted 100 years ago in 1921, and the island is known as the Pineapple Isle.
Okay, I think we're probably in Hawaii.
Yes.
But I don't know which island for sure.
Okay, well, there's an architectural feature that's named after this island, and it's often featured on this island and its sister islands.
Architectural feature, would that include Lanai?
It's Lanai in the Hawaiian Islands. And in architecture, a lanai is a type of roofed open-sided veranda or patio or porch. It originated in Hawaii, and it's quite appropriate for the kind of climate they have there.
For sure. I wish I was sitting on one right now.
Yes. The island lanai is located just west of Maui and south of Molokai. It's small, about 364 square kilometers in size. It's known as the Pineapple Isle because of the large farming operation that was there. It was owned by the Hawaiian Pineapple Company, which was later renamed the Dole Food Company. And that operation took up almost the whole island, 98%.
98% is the number you mentioned before, which is belonging to just one person now, right?
That's right. The land was sold in 2012 to Larry Ellison, a tech billionaire. He paid $300 million for 87,000 acres, and in the years since, he has spent about $500 million on things like 2 resort hotels, renewable energy infrastructure, a hydroponic agriculture venture, and an animal rescue center to look after invasive feral cats who roam the island.
Okay, those are some interesting projects, but I'm also wondering, what about the other 2% of the land?
Well, the little bit left is either public land or privately held land in Lanai City, which is the only municipality.
I'm actually surprised to hear about the pineapples, because for sure I associate Hawaii with pineapples, so they just don't grow there anymore?
Not on Lanai. Pineapples are not a crop there any longer. Production was phased out in 1992. Reportedly because of high labor costs and land costs.
So if not pineapples, you mentioned the resorts and things, but I mean, what is the grand plan for the land?
Well, Ellison wants to turn the island into a sustainable tourist destination, which sounds really neat. But I'm wondering, is it a good idea to have the island under the control of one man? I mean, even if he is investing a lot of his own money in it, should he have so much say in determining the future direction of one of just 6 inhabited Hawaiian islands? Not for me to say.
That was our second archipelago episode. What a party.
Yep, quite the trip.
Okay, well, before we head out, we'd like to say, if you have a show you'd like us to review, or if you have an island you'd like us to feature on Island Watch, please send your suggestions to islandwatchpodcast@gmail.com or islandwatchcast on Twitter. We'd love your input.
From here until the fall, we're putting the Good Ship Island Watch into dry dock, hoisting a few cocktails and mocktails on the lanai, and then setting to work handcrafting our third season.
In the meantime, we'd like to say thank you. Thank you for listening, thank you for your feedback, and thank you for being part of this grand adventure. We'll see you in the fall.
Fair winds and calm seas. This has been a production of Phosphine League.
Phosphine League.
Phosphine League.
Phosphine League.
Well, no! Why does it keep coming out like that? Okay, here I go. Well.
That's one for the blooper reel. Guernsey Literary Potato Peel. Guernsey Literary Peel. Guernsey Literary Potato Pie Peel. Ding, 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 ding.
The one we visited with the musical Rom Kong. Rom Kong.
King Kong, Hong Kong, Rom Kong, you know.
Oh, that's where it went. Was that a wrap?
Yep, okay. Yep, let's hit stop.